Shall we get this party started?
I'm wearing my party pants.
Excellent. Wearing my business socks.
Greetings and bienvenido a la podcast de PC Gamer number 209. It's February 4th and I'm your not-so-bilingual podcast host, Joshua Daniel Augustine, as my mother, who will be so proud of me for finally hosting this podcast, sometimes calls me. But enough about me. Let's talk about MMOs for an hour straight.
Kidding.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of great games are coming out this week. We need to talk about, and thankfully, you won't have to listen to me ramble for the entire podcast because I have by my side the trusty stable of PC gamer Mecha Warriors. First up, the trekkiest trekster I've ever had the pleasure of trekking with in Star Trek Online, reviews editor Dan Stapleton.
Am I Mecha Dan Stapleton?
Yes, you can be today.
Excellent.
Senior editor Evan Lottie, who once dual-wielded railguns and would have saved the day if they hadn't locked onto the heart of a stray cat instead of that of his enemies.
You're describing that moment in Eraser, aren't you? I love you, Josh.
Hello. Yes. Hello. It is good to see you. Intern Eric Belsas, whose love for ice cream is tempered only by the amount of root beer in his fridge.
You know what? Combine those and you've got paradise.
It is pretty delicious. I've tasted that paradise.
Are you taking, like, root beer float baths? Is that...
I just submerse myself and
Is that what they do in the Dakotas?
It's quite relaxing. You'll have to try it sometime.
It's a North Dakota day spa.
South Dakota, I'll have you know.
Whatever. They're the same thing.
Whoa. Hey,
all right.
Both of the listeners are going to write in.
Yeah. Both of them. One from south and one from north.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. And last but farthest from least, my favorite Bauman, Mr. Andy Bauman, podcast producing machine.
You know other Baumans?
No, but if I did, I am confident that you would be my favorite.
All right. I like that attitude.
Yeah.
I bet none of them ski as well as you do.
Totally a fact. I will take that to the bank and cash it.
Please do, but can you wait till next Thursday? I'll get my paycheck.
Yeah, you can post it. No problem.
Excellent. So before we get into the news, there's a little hiccup on the latest issue's demo disc, and we want to make sure all of our readers get access to the awesome demos that are on there. So an unfortunate duplication error during the production is the disc included on the March 2010 issue of PC Gamer caused some of the original install files to be corrupted. If your EVE Online install isn't working, you can download the trial online at www.eveonline.com/future. And we highly recommend that you do. EVE Online is a great MMO. In fact, the greatest MMO of 2009, according to yours truly and the rest of the staff at PC Gamer. So yeah, get out there, check it out. Enough about that. Let's get into the wonderful news. Mr. Andy Bauman, would you kindly play the call by don't period reply? That's like fifth on the list.
PC Gamer, my name is Will. I'm in South Dakota. I have a question for you. I was listening to your last PC Gamer podcast, and you had a gentleman call in about Bioshock 2 or Mass Effect 2. Now, I'm very interested in Mass Effect 2, and I have yet to play Mass Effect 1, just a time constraint since I have four children. I'm wondering, should I go back and actually purchase and play Mass Effect 1, or can I bypass it and go directly to Mass Effect 2? Look forward to your answer. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller, so take care, guys. Thanks for your help.
Oh, he's from a Dakota. He's going to come after me.
My day just got like 4,000% better. We've got South Dakotans on this show.
Yeah, and you're talking about Mass Effect. Those are two of your favorite topics.
I know.
If you're getting our issue, if you've gotten our latest issue, you'll see our review of Mass Effect 2. Which pretty much starts out by saying it's greatly enhanced by playing Mass Effect 1 first. It would be like watching Empire Strikes Back without first watching Star Wars. You can do it, but it's highly recommended that you play the first one first. And I know Logan just recently he hadn't played Mass Effect 1 either, but before Mass Effect 2 came out, he went and downloaded Mass Effect 1 off Steam, which was going for like $5. It's still damn cheap. You can get it from either Steam or the EA downloader store, I think. or a number of other sources at this point. And it's cheap and well worth the time. It's a lengthy investment of time, but it's worth it. What do you think, Eric? Do you think that's an accurate assessment?
Oh, absolutely. With the number of decisions, the surprisingly large number of decisions, not just the big one, every little thing you do carries over. It just enhances that game more and more.
The first time I played through Mass Effect 2, I played through without loading a save game. And, you know, that's another thing you can do is actually import a save game, and all these little decisions, people you save will come up and say hi, or, you know, I've got another thing for you to do since you already helped me, you know. The first time I played through, I played without loading a save game. And then I've been playing through again with a save game, and the difference is significant. I mean, you have a lot of things calling back to events in the first game. If you hadn't played the first game in a long time, then it reminds you, oh yeah, I remember doing that. It has been a couple of years. But if you're playing it back to back, it's even more contiguous. It's like it'd be like watching like a movie marathon.
Now if you haven't. If you haven't played before, it assumes that you chose the Renegade path in the first game. Isn't that right?
It kind of does, yeah. I mean, it's not uniform. It kind of mixes them up. It just kind of randomly chooses some choices. But like the big choice at the end, it assumes that you made the not quite nice guy decision.
Okay, so if you're like, I'm the kind of guy that can't be a bad guy in these type of games. I just feel bad about these little digital people. I want them to find their puppies. Am I the kind? Do I need to play through the first one if I don't want to feel bad about how I'm being treated in the second one?
No, not at all. That isn't really a factor. You kind of start with, if you start with a blank slate, I mean, you can still play through it and be a totally nice guy. People don't say, oh, you're a jerk for having done that thing. And actually that decision doesn't play a huge role, and none of the decisions really alter the course of Mass Effect 2. It's just kind of like the world around you has shifted slightly, and different people are playing roles, or they could be playing different roles if they survived or not. So it's not earth-shattering. You're not going to start as a renegade in Mass Effect 2, but the world has shifted in such a way that certain people are not there.
I wonder, Dan, if people have a notion that in KOTOR, the endings for being bad or good were like strikingly different.
Right.
In Mass Effect, the ending is pretty much the same. It just, there's like one or two things that happen in a different manner. So it's not right, like
there are some characters that live and die depending on what you.
So, but it's not like your entire, you know, paradigm is shifted.
It doesn't have a dramatic effect on the course of galactic events. Those are more or less fixed.
Yeah. So being a renegade might not have as much meaning as, so you don't have to be afraid of being a renegade, you know?
Yeah. It's not like in KOTOR where if you turn to the dark side, you become the new Dark Lord of the Sith.
Exactly.
It's a little more subtle than that.
Yeah.
So what are you guys thinking about Mass Effect 2? You guys liking it?
Fantastic. It really is. We should preface this discussion with possible spoiler alerts. If you're really concerned about hearing anything, we'll steer away from any plot points or anything. But if you're really concerned about hearing anything about the game before you play it and you still haven't played it, you might want to skip ahead a bit.
Oh, wait. Can I skip ahead?
Yeah. So it's a game. You can say that.
Oh, okay, cool.
No, I mean, from a design perspective and from a critical perspective, it's, Mass Effect 2 is the most dramatically different sequel that I've ever seen.
Really?
I mean, other than something that's a, you know, 10-year or 5-year gap remake or something like that.
Yeah.
The extent at which BioWare just took a, you know, not a machete, but a chainsaw to whole features of the game and just hit the delete key, inventory, gone. Mako, gone, basically. The entire extent of their mission structure, the Citadel, they've completely reworked. Just how slim everything feels in the game, how modular feels everything. Everything feels in the game, for better or worse, is very different to me.
Yeah, I mean, one of the chief complaints about the first game was that the inventory system was just awful. I mean, you would be going through combat and like a different situation would arise than you had prepared for. So you pause, And you know, that's fine because you're pausing to, you can like issue orders in pause mode because it's kind of tactical combat. So you can kind of take your time with it, but you have to pause. You enter the inventory system. It takes like 5 or 10 clicks to just to swap out a weapon mod so that you're doing a different type of damage. So, like if you're fighting a guy with shields or fighting a guy with biotic or, you know, armor or whatever. So it just really messed with the pace of combat for me. And it was really inconvenient to navigate that system. In this one, they've completely stripped out the inventory system, which, I mean, if you're really kind of an RPG fan, that's kind of a blow to it because it does strip out a lot of the RPG stuff. There's no inventory management, very little equipment management. So it's kind of a pure, third person shooter at that point.
Yeah. Even the, you do level up, but it's hardly as deep and complex as the first one's RPG elements. It's pretty much just what powers do I want to level up. It's not health or armor or electronics skills or hacking. None of that's in there anymore. It's just, hey, combat skills.
Right. And it's exactly that. It's you're just picking between, I think you start with 4 different combat skills and you can go up to like 7 for Shepard. And I think the all the companion characters are at 3 and then you can unlock a 4th. So they've really slimmed it down. Whereas in the first one, it was like 12 for everybody.
So on those merits, then, if we're saying that they sacrifice some of the RPG complexity for simplicity and getting people in the action and feeling more like a shooter, if that's what we're agreeing to, how is the shooter stuff then?
It's okay. I still don't feel that the shooting is really the highlight of the game. It's serviceable. It's decent. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. The highlight of the game is the role playing aspect and the dialogue choices, the decision making, that's very well written. The characters are very well developed. It's a story that's very interactive for me. What do you think, Eric?
For me, it's, hey, you got Gears of War in my Mass Effect. You know, you have a storm button like in the last game, but when you storm up to a wall, you automatically slide into it and take cover, which I guess would be cool if it really mattered, which in the end it doesn't.
You don't think it matters if you're undercover or not?
Well, it really does depend on your class. In the end, I just kind of found myself running in with a submachine gun and blasting everything in the face, and I played as an adept. Mm. It's cool looking. But I agree in that it feels underwhelming.
It's not, I don't think that they really were focusing on trying to make a great shooter. I think they tried to make it kind of, you know, light and fun, with a minor degree of challenge, because I think they know that their focus, their strengths as a studio, BioWare, is in the storytelling and the writing.
This might sound like I'm nitpicking, but I think it's sort of maybe a symptom of a larger issue. I feel like in Mass Effect 1 as well, but in 2, it's maybe more noticeable. All of the enemies are incredibly slow. Just their movement speed, they have this sort of hunched over animation style, and they just sort of lurch forward slowly, 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 and you can move wherever you need to get around them. And I can understand why they might do that, but it just makes, it sets like a very stale pace for the combat for me. I mean, I shoot my shotgun, I reload, And the biotic abilities are kind of overpowered, I think, depending on which ones you use in your party composition. I mean, in most cases, I'm sitting behind cover. I hover my mouse over the guy I want to kill, and I hit Q and E to tell my guys to use their abilities, and the enemy just dies instantly. And well, that's not fun to me.
Well, you could always turn up the difficulty. I mean, the only thing the difficulty affects is the combat. So if you crank that up, and again, the combat, you know, does not seem to be there to really challenge you, because I think they want you to experience, you know, get to the parts, you know, between combat where you're making decisions, which is, again, for me, the kind of the meat of this game. And if they, you know, get people stuck on the combat, then, you know, you're going to get frustrated and give up and not get to the good stuff. And cranking up the combat is a perfectly good way to achieve that if it's not challenging enough for you.
It does make the combat a lot more fun. In my second playthrough, I'm playing as a soldier because, I don't know. Like I said in the first playthrough, I just kind of ended up using my guns, and I'm playing through in Insanity. There's an achievement for it, so I am having a lot more fun with the combat Once the enemies seem to react better, use their powers. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I haven't cranked up the difficulty yet myself, but I might have to do that. Just since I have already gone through once, I want to have a little more challenge out of it. Oh, and I just want to say, and without spoiling anything, it's got a fantastic ending. The last mission is amazing.
Excellent. Let's get to what's really important. How's the film grain? Film grain 2.0?
I turned it off.
Intense. Yeah, me too.
Blasphemy!
No, it's a lot more subtle. The first one, it was like it was snowing. It's a lot better done in this one.
Yeah. Oh, you guys are having fun.
While we're bringing up random things, I don't know if it was a mocap situation, but Miranda's smile is terrifying and horrible.
Yeah.
Despite arguably being the most attractive character in the game, she smiles like a horse. A space horse.
Wearing a space blouse.
What is also horrifying is how many hours Eric has spent mining in Mass Effect 2. Eric, how many minerals do you have now?
There is a mining minigame. I guess this isn't spoiling anything. You mine metals to upgrade your systems. And I'm kind of a completionist. I've actually gone to every planet you unlock in the galaxy and depleted all of the minerals off every planet.
So when you say kind of a completionist, you mean the kind of a completionist that is OCD?
Yeah, yeah.
That kind.
I broke 1,000,000 platinum, and I think all in all I spent less than 100,000 during the game total. So they put in a lot of minerals. Just so you know, you don't have to mine them all, but hey, you can.
Would you say you went triple platinum?
I would say I probably like wiped out at least like 40 developing species because
exactly. Like if we're thinking about this in Prime Directive terms or any kind of like culturally significant terms, you have stolen all the valuable resources. I mean, non-biological ones, I guess, from every planet that you can get to in the game. So
you're basically a war criminal.
Yeah. He will be the villain of Mass Effect 3. We must stop Eric from mining all the minerals.
Hey, to be fair, I ended with a full paragon meter, all right?
Nobody's asking questions, apparently, yeah. And that's kind of a weird segue to another point, but where are we're talking about what features are cut. The specters are almost completely cut from this game. They're really a non-issue, as is the, what are they called? The Alliance, right?
The Alliance Council, so, yeah.
They're just so reduced, and the way that kind of Cerebus comes in the beginning, that's maybe a spoiler. I don't know. It happens at the very beginning, but that you get supplanted and you're working in this other role.
Yeah, it is a little bit jarring in the beginning, but I mean, it does kind of not matter that much.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
It is a problem in the fiction. I guess one thing, we're talking about the mining, like Eric was like really addicted to the mining, whereas I found it really boring. I found it kind of a chore. And that's kind of an issue with the mini games in this one as compared to the last one. The last one had, at least in the PC version, they made a unique mini game for it where you were playing kind of like a circular version of Frogger to hack, open doors and stuff like that. And containers, and it got progressively harder as the game went on. In this one, there are a variety of mini games, but they all stay exactly the same throughout the game. There's no increase in difficulty as you go, and for me, that's a real problem because you know every time you're doing it, you're doing the exact same mini game. It just became tedious very quickly.
Is there random elements at least?
It's slightly randomized. I mean, like there's one where you're connecting circuits and you have to like mouse over a couple of nodes and it reveals a symbol and you connect the two that have the same symbol, but yeah, you can always, so it's kind of like memory.
It's slightly dynamic.
Right. So, but it changes the layout of it, but the game itself is the same and it doesn't get any more difficult or complex as you move on. It gets old much quicker than it should have if they just notched up the difficulty, you know, easy, medium, hard, as you progress. But
here's maybe a more practical but also terribly unrealistic way of representing how we feel about the game. If you could only play one, would you rather play Dragon Age or Mass Effect 2?
Me personally, I would probably go Mass Effect 2 because I am more of a sci-fi fan.
I think it has to be Mass Effect 2. I loved Dragon Age, but Mass Effect 2 is the world I craved to be in again. just revisiting that, and their codex is so dense and heavy, and they've written lore for all of this. It's a blast.
You think they wrote more for Mass Effect 2 than for Dragon Age?
I'm not sure. I'll admit.
Maybe, you hear it more?
I didn't read everything in Dragon Age, I'll admit. And in Mass Effect, every time the little codex symbol pops up, I'm like, man, I want to hear about this. Mm-hmm. So
Dragon Age is like twice as long as Mass Effect, isn't it? There's like a lot more content. Because Mass Effect, you'll finish in like 30-some hours if you do everything. Whereas Dragon Age is more like 60, right?
Yeah. Unless you're like me. Actually, I have an Excel spreadsheet, cause
oh, good
Josh. Josh called me crazy for, doing my little mining. So I decided to keep track of how much time.
Yeah. And it turned out Josh was right.
23 hours and 42 minutes spent mining.
Oh.
Ish.
It's an entire game.
You should join a union at that point. you're gonna get iridium lung.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. Eric, yep. I wonder, I kind of agree with you, like the codec is a little bit more interesting in Mass Effect. And I wonder if it's something to do with like the futureness of it. If you're like, wow, this could happen, so you're like really interested in reading it, and in this Dragon Age, you're like, it's in the past, so you're like, oh.
And in Dragon Age, I think it's a little more dense, and it's a little more, it's written atmospherically, so it's like, oh, when the years passed and stuff, and Mass Effect, it's like, here's how this sweet laser gun works.
Yeah, it's like more science-y. I don't know. I guess I am a science nerd, so that helps.
Yeah, most of it just depends on whether you're a sci-fi fan or a fantasy fan. I think that's the number one factor in choosing between those two games.
Dragon Age definitely seems more tactical, where Mass Effect is more kind of action-y.
Very true. Dragon Age combat, the combat is completely different in those two games.
You knew we couldn't get even halfway through the podcast without me at least mentioning World of Warcraft. the big news this week was Blizzard announced they're going to be adding like a premium feature on their website or their iPhone application that'll allow you to work the auction house from anywhere, even if you aren't logged into the game, which is a big deal for those people because there are tons of people that treat WoW kind of like the stock market. And all they do is log in onto their little banker tune, scan the auction house, look like, oh, arcane dust is 2% cheaper than it is yesterday. I bet I could buy the market, corner it, and raise it up. Do you guys, there seems to be a lot of microtransactions going on with WoW. And it makes sense because people will pay it. But, do you think it's fair to charge people a little premium for a new feature like this?
It's something in addition to the game. I mean, it's a separate thing. So I don't have a problem with charging an extra. I mean, if you're downloading an iPhone app, you charge a couple bucks for that. It's not a reoccurring fee, right? It's just charge for the iPhone app, right?
They haven't said.
Okay.
They haven't even said that it will cost money. They just called it a premium feature. So assumedly it will.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with that.
I hope it's per transaction. That would be hilarious.
It's like a stockbroker fee.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't find that fun personally. That sounds like work. I'm asking, say I corner the market and I mass like a ton of money. What do I do with that money?
You buy more things and corner more markets.
Right. I mean, I don't really have a desire to be a Warcraft mogul, but if other people want to, fine.
Fair enough. I told you about that EVE Online podcast I was listening to, didn't I? Mm-hmm. It's basically where it's one guy going through reading the opening and closing prices of the minerals for the day before, every single mineral in the game. It's like 15 minutes long and it's him just going iridium, up 3% from yesterday at 15,000 and goes through all of them. And I've listened to it like 20 times. I don't understand it, but it's just interesting. Like, these people seriously do. Like, they could be making tons of money on the stock market, but instead they're making tons of ISK on a virtual market.
Wow.
ISK. What a weird name for money.
I want to see a suit walking around on his phone going, no, sell the plus 10 sword of enchantment. I need the plus 20. It'd be so
Absolutely.
Amazing.
That's hilarious. I mean, back to the original question, I guess I see this particular feature as almost, it's more of a tool, right? It's more of like a niche thing that's going to suit a handful of people or maybe not in WoW's case, but a percentage of people. Whereas, I mean, I sort of object, even though I don't play WoW, to things like changing your race and your gender, which are paid for. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, since those are more associated with your identity, which I see is sort of included in that subscription fee of your characters, you should be able to change those somewhat at will for free.
But yeah. I don't know. I don't have a problem with them discouraging that kind of behavior, because I mean, with an MMO, I mean, so much of it is, you know, you've created this character and that character is persistent within this world. And if you can swap, you know, whatever you want about him at any time, it kind of takes away from that. Although different MMOs, like for example, Star Trek Online, allow you to change in game for free, though you have to spend in game money to do it, which, I mean, I guess I guess I have a problem with that too.
Answered
your own question.
What would the average, or not, I mean, I guess the maybe a hardcore Power WoW user, what would they get out of, like, someone who's not actually trying to play the auction house market, so to say, what would they get out of an iPhone app? Just like, if they're bored or something, they can do their transactions, or like, what would they get out of it?
Yeah, the only thing I can think, I mean, is if you're like the kind of guy that thinks about WoW when you aren't playing, like me, if you're like at work or something, if you're not at an awesome office like PC Gamer where I can actually boot up WoW anytime I want, you know, it's a way to stay interactive with the game. And if you're at the office and you're like, oh man, I really wanted, you know, to buy these herbs so I can have a flask for tonight's raid. You know, you don't have to wait till you go home. You can kind of hop on, check the prices. Oh, they're cheap now. Okay, I'll buy it. And then it'll be waiting for you when you get home.
Okay. So it might be useful to some people.
I think it'll be useful to a select group, you know, and some people, you know, just want to keep their WoW time, and they don't want it invading the rest of their life. So that's cool. All right. One more WoW announcement, and I promise I will not mention it for the rest of the podcast, most likely. But this is a big announcement. Arthas is dead. Well, he was, but now he's actually alive again after Blizzard removed all the loot and achievements from the first guild to kill him in 25-man mode and banned all of their raiders for 72 hours.
Wow. What did they do?
So this fight was not tested on public test realms, the Arthas fight, because they wanted to keep it a secret. And there's grenades in the game. And for whatever reason, grenades bugged this encounter out, where there's
Mr. T grenade?
No, not Mr. T grenades, thankfully. Okay. This is Serenite grenades that engineers can make, just a little fire and siege damage. At one point, Arthas, like, destroys part of the platform, and then, like, people come down and start picking up your raid members and flying them away. And for some reason, if you use a grenade, like, that part of the platform rebuilds and the people never come down. You know, the guild is saying that they didn't know. They noticed that it was bugged, but they didn't know what caused it, which is a fairly legitimate thing, because you throw grenades anyways. Rogues have grenades in their rotations. But I don't know, 72 hour ban is pretty intense for all that. So Blizzard was, understandably upset that Arthas got killed so quickly, because all the other bosses have taken like a week to get killed.
Right. But I mean, that sounds more like Blizzard's fault. I mean, that they, you know, didn't test this thing and put it out there, and the guys that test it and find a bug get punished.
Yeah. That's definitely their side of the story. Blizzard is saying, you know, you knew what you were doing and it was an exploit. I kind of tend to side with the raiders here. Like, I'm not sure that they would have known what was causing the exploit. And it definitely was some guy at QA at Blizzard is getting chewed out right now. For sure.
And there's no way they could have known, right? Unless they had an insider at Blizzard QA, right? There's no way they could have known. They went into this, and I may not know all the facts here, but based on what Josh just said, they went into this instance, not knowing not knowing what they were going to face. They do what they normally do. In the course of that, they encounter a bug, didn't necessarily know what happens, or maybe they did, maybe they did figure it out halfway through. Even if they did, so what? You know, that they're, if they're doing what they normally do and the game is bugged, it's not their fault if they beat it because of a bug.
I definitely agree. I totally agree with them taking away the loots, the achievements, kind of reset Arthas, because, you know, he is a big guy. You don't want him to be beat the first time because of a bug.
Right, take that I away. See that.
Yeah. But then give the guys another chance, reset their instance, and let them go through again.
And don't ban them. Pat them on the head for finding a bug for you.
Yeah. I mean, this could turn into a real nasty PR thing if Insidia, which is the guild, is one of the most prominent WoW raiding guilds, if they come out and say, well, you know what? Blizzard's a terrible company. Screw them. And go to another MMO. Like, in the overall scope of things, it's not a big deal. But it'd be a big PR thing where community people would go, oh my gosh, the biggest raiders just left and said this game is terrible. You know, if we're hardcore raiders, maybe we should leave too.
Yeah, I mean, if it's an isolated incident, I doubt that guys that heavily invested in the game are gonna take their ball and go home. I think that if a pattern were to emerge, that would be a problem. But yeah, if it's a one-time thing, I think Blizzard will get away with it pretty cleanly. But it's still, I mean, banning them for 72 hours, why?
That's true. I still believe in Blizzard, and they'll come out, hopefully, end this ban early and find a way to resolve it before it gets out of hand. But it was a little, disheartening. But yeah, Arthas is still out there. So if you are a raider, it's been reset. So you can still be the first. Get out there tonight. Figure it out.
The first with an asterisk. It's like steroids in baseball.
Who wants to talk about this Ubisoft DRM?
Ugh.
Oh gosh.
Basically, Ubisoft is saying they've got their ubi.com is their website, I think. And anytime from Settlers 7, I think, is the first one on out, you're going to have an ubi.com account and be logged in every time you play an Ubisoft game. Which means that you will have to have an active internet connection every time you want to play an Ubisoft game.
So there's not even an offline mode like with Steam, huh?
No, not that I can tell. In ideal conditions, you open the game the first time you sign in, it remembers your stuff, and when you launch the game, it says syncing your saved games, syncing your profile, and the game launches, which is kind of cool. It's sort of like Steam Cloud, where you'll have your saved game in any Ubisoft game, no matter where you are. However, if you don't have an internet connection, you are out of luck, it seems.
If you don't have an internet connection, if their server goes down, you can't save your game. And that's kind of messed up. I can see definitely the thinking behind it. The thinking is that, a pirated copy of this game, like even if they remove the internet connection requirement, the functionality of saving locally is just not there. So a pirated version, you won't be able to save your game. So in theory, that could be a real stab at pirates, but the potential downsides are, gods. I mean, that's not good.
Yeah.
I think we're headed for a PR disaster.
it seems minor on the surface, but speaking for myself and probably a lot of other core gamers, I hate jumping through to other portals. I hate having to create a new login, new password, approve that through my email, jump back.
Have another application running in your system.
Yeah.
Tray.
Go back through the web browser, alt tab back to the game, approve something. And it's just, when I start my game, I want the game to start. Like, I get annoyed by something like GameSpy, just through certain game multiplayer modes like Red Alert 3. Having to log into that while I'm in game is kind of annoying. I mean, from a usability standpoint, there's got to be a better way.
I mean, to be fair, a lot of games for a long time at least to play online, have required you to have an account. Like Battlefield 2, for example. You had to associate the game with your EA account. Grand Theft Auto 4 had you log in like two or three different services. That was ridiculous. It's not a new thing to require you to have an account. It's just a long-standing annoyance. The idea of removing functionality that has traditionally been done locally, like saving a game and requiring you to do that through their servers, is kind of frightening.
Yeah. Excellent. I mean, completely.
And I'm not sure if Assassin's Creed 2 will have that in there. I guess that's the next game coming out from Ubisoft. It'll be out very shortly. I guess it probably won't if Settlers is the first one that's going to have it.
I think that's the way I heard it. So yeah.
Yeah. We'll keep you guys posted once we actually get a retail copy of some of this stuff and try it out for ourselves.
Yeah, we should be getting Assassin's Creed in very soon.
Also, wonderful news this week. Fallout New Vegas came out with a new trailer. It looks great, but what looks even greater is our next month's cover, which has it on Fallout New Vegas. And it's a wonderful story. Definitely pick it up. Check it out.
Yeah, the trailer is kind of a parallel of the original Fallout 3 trailer, where it pans out to show, instead of showing a Brotherhood of Steel character, it's a New California Republic Ranger, which is, kind of the not really the equivalent of the Brotherhood of Steel, but a major force in this new game. So it's a cool looking trailer.
I think I'm able to establish their formula here. So basically there's the long pan out very slowly. There's a era specific music that's authentic. This time it's Frank Sinatra's Blue Moon. I don't think he wrote that, but it's his version. And what else? There's the ruined landscape, and there's the enigmatic or like
masked character standing looking ominously, and then it goes dun dun,
and Ron Perlman, of course.
Yeah, and Ron. Well, war never changes. Why should their theme?
It's a fun slogan.
All right. So before readers' questions, last note: 10 Quest Gold is $5 on Steam, and if you don't have that, get that now. It's
you are
like,
cool.
Yes.
Yeah. Buy the game.
That's an action RPG. If anyone's wondering,
it's a Diablo-like. Yeah. Buy it with 5 of your friends and play co-op. You will have a blast.
Now, would you recommend that over Torchlight? If anybody out there hasn't played Torchlight?
Oh gosh, Torchlight is easier to pick up and put down.
Yeah. Titan Quest, though, has co-op, which Torchlight does not.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I guess if you're going to play alone, then Torchlight might be the way to go. If you want to play with friends, then get Titan Quest.
Yeah, Titan Quest has more of a story, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. And it has some really pretty nice physics. Like, I know that the centaurs, in particular, like Ragdoll, very nicely, when you hit them with your frost mace, it just feels like you're pushing this horse downstairs, basically. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's hilarious. Okay.
It feels like all the times you've pushed a horse down the stairs.
Yeah. And oh man, those were the days.
All right, before PETA kills us, let's move on to reader questions. We had a few listeners send in a bunch of questions asking us which games out of list or out of two, you know, we would choose to purchase today if we could pick one. So what I did was I put these all together, kind of summarized them in quick this or that statements. So we're going to have a little rapid fire answer question or session. I'm going to call out some questions and give it to someone. You have to answer immediately and no explanation. You can give like a short explanation, but no long-winded stuff.
I have a question though, Josh. What if you ask Evan what game he would play and he picks the wrong one?
Then you throw something at him.
Okay, I can do that. I have a Nerf gun I can make use of. Oh,
even man. Better.
I'm only holding the stainless steel water bottle, Dan, so sorry about that.
All right, well, get your aim set on Eric because he is getting the first question. And it's a doozy.
Oh, no. Yeah,
this is a big one. Eric, Mass Effect 2 or Bioshock 2?
Mass Effect 2.
Evan, Dragon Age or Fallout 3?
Fallout 3.
Dan, SubCom 2 or Batman Arkham Asylum?
That's not fair. Those are two completely different games. Batman.
Batman. All right. Andy, Stalker, Call of Pripyat or Metro 2033?
Wow. I want to see Metro. What that's all about. All right.
About. Now.
See, he got two that are very closely analogous. That's not fair.
Hey, sometimes that's harder to choose.
That's a challenging story because it's the original developer working on a new game in a new direction or the original IP, you know, in its same form. It's tough.
You picked right.
It's like old school, new school.
All right, but you're not done yet, Andy. Now Metro 2033 or Aliens versus Predator?
AVP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Evan, Star Trek Online or EVE Online?
Star Trek.
All right, Eric.
Having played both, yeah.
Eric, Dawn of Discovery or Tropico 3?
Oh, Dawn of Discovery, hands down.
Damn right.
Damn,
that game has one of the best tutorials I've ever seen in a game ever. It's worth seeing.
It's incredible.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, Dan, wrapping everything together. Bioshock 2 or Stalker, Call of Pripyat?
I would go Bioshock myself.
Bioshock. And Evan, the last question. You get three to choose from. Choose wisely.
Whoa.
Global Agenda, Bad Company 2, or Dawn of War 2?
I've played all of these. Dawn of War 2. There's nothing else like it other than Company of Heroes.
Which isn't entirely like it either.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like it. It's a terrific game. Yeah.
Well, there you go. We have solved all of your gaming purchasing problems for you. Feel free to thank us however you deem appropriate.
Yeah. And I believe Dawn of War 2 maybe currently still has a $20 sale going on Steam.
Steam? Good. Let me check.
Yeah, that one does require Steam, by the way. So if you're going to buy it, if you buy it in the store, you have to register it on Steam.
Yeah.
$30. It's
$30. Oh, $30. So, okay.
And if you want to follow Andy's advice and get Metro 2033, if you pre-order now on Steam, you get Red Faction Guerrilla for free.
Wow.
I thought Andy recommended AVP instead of Metro.
Yeah, but his first recommendation was 2033 over Stalker.
Hold on. Mm-hmm. When is the release date?
For which?
Metro.
March.
Yeah, it's middle of next month.
Gosh. All right.
It's going to be worth the wait from what I've seen.
No, I mean, that's too quick. I need more time to finish games.
There are a huge number of great games coming out soon.
I need, like, gaming fiber. I'm all backed up.
That's not an image I wanted to have in my mind. All right. Let's do one or two reader questions. Could you do the one from James Stewart from the grave?
Oh, man. I don't know which is which. Hold on.
Wait, did he die?
Jimmy Stewart's been dead.
Oh, that.
Sorry. Oh,
yeah.
Now, is this coming from the grave or from beyond the grave?
Whoa. We'll have to listen and find out.
Hello, PC Gamer Podcast. This is James in Abilene, Texas. I had a question regarding the Star Trek Online MMO. I wanted to know what you thought about Cryptic offering tons of bonuses and other game benefits for pre-ordering the game, such as items, costumes, crew members, etc. This would also include the limited time offer of lifetime membership. Does it seem to y'all that they do not have a lot of faith in their product, that they have to entice people to purchase it by offering such in-game rewards? I was also curious what you think about the lifetime membership. Thus far, no MMO that I know of has had this option has done very well. Do you think this could be the same scenario of MMOs past? I look forward to hearing your opinion on this, and thank you for your time. Take care.
That's a bunch of questions. Let's see.
And good ones that we were actually talking about yesterday at lunch. I think in general, Dan, I think kind of what we were saying, if I can remember, was a lot of these incredible, ridiculous, very specific and big and like different subscription options tend to confuse people. That's kind of maybe my perspective. And in that way, they can be bad.
You were comparing it directly to Hellgate, though.
Sure.
I mean, Hellgate's options were very confusing because there was both the offline and online mode. You didn't have to subscribe at all. Or you could subscribe lifetime. Whereas with an MMO, it's less confusing, I think, because you know going in that you're going to require a subscription. So how long you're going to play is the only question. If you do continue to play for a long time, then a $200 lifetime subscription is a deal, a great deal. I don't think that they, you know, enticing people to play with cool add-ins like that are, you know, and bonus items for pre-ordering. I don't think that's showing, a lack of confidence in the game. I think you're going to see more and more of that going forward. I think it's just trying to draw more people in, and, you know, get them interested in the game. If they were kind of on the fence about it, they want to push them over the edge of buying it. It's really a dog eat dog world of MMOs out there right now, because there are so many and they are all, you know, really, you know, I don't want to say desperate, but they really want your business. Trying to carve out this little niche for themselves next to WoW. And if they can, you know, get you to jump on board with an extra, then great. And the other reason they do it is because retailers, any outlet you can buy it from, Steam, GameStop, Amazon, wherever, they all want a special incentive that people can only get from them. So, and more, publishers are, you know, driving their developers to produce these extras, to please the retailers who will then give the game a more prominent space on their shelf.
Yeah. And that specifically, maybe that's what I mean by what's the most confusing. If you go to StarTrekOnline.com/retail, you can see a full, probably 30 to 40. Basically, it's a page dedicated to explaining the things that you get if you buy it in a certain place. And there's about 40 entries. Amazon, two different Atari ones, Best Buy, from Cryptic himself, Direct to Drive, GameStop, GameTap, Steam, Xfire, Walmart. and then there's a bunch of other ones in Europe. And
I'm watching having to scroll this list, and it's a huge list.
It's significant. I didn't even know how Xfire sells games. Okay, that's cool. but it does seem like they got a little trigger happy. Like there's a deal that they did with Del Taco. Is that right, Dan?
Well, yeah. that one is. I think that's kind of cool. Because what they're doing is they have, you can get a Big Gulp or whatever their equivalent is. I've never actually been to a Del Taco. there's some kind of drink cup. I guess it's just a special drink cup you can get for a dollar or two extra or whatever.
I think it's called Macho.
Macho Taco. So, So you get this drink cup, and it comes with a code on it that gives you a couple of extra days of game time. And if you get all four cups, you get, you know, 10 days of game time instead of 8. So, you know, it's just a nice little, you know, cross promotion. And that's, you know, that's something that people can enjoy, I think. I mean, I don't see any problem with that.
Yeah, it's not the end of the world.
I just was hoping for, you know, an exclusive Hamburglar officer if you pre-ordered from McDonald's. It didn't happen, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's maybe what we're more concerned with. I'm glad you bring that up. Like, when the availability of these things and the choices you can make in advance and pre-ordering determine what type of, like, valuable in-game content you get. I mean, obviously the MMO is a good situation for that in terms of it's easy to put in new content. That's naturally the stuff that players are after, but, let's see. There's the Borg crew member. There's certain outfits. You can get the Enterprise itself when you start the game. Am I remembering that correctly?
That is correct. You can have the original series Enterprise as the starting ship instead of the standard one.
Isn't that like incredibly awesome? Like, I'm not a huge Star Trek buff, but to me, that's like, wow, that would be really cool.
I think it is a significant, and like I've seen a few people flying around in those, and it's like, oh, that's kind of cool. It's eye catching. I don't think you can actually customize it like you can with the starting ship, which is kind of disappointing. And actually, as a side note, I'm a little bit let down by the ship customization options in Star Trek Online. They're not as diverse as I would have expected, especially from Cryptic, who really pride themselves on their character customization items. They just have like three ships in a set that you can mix and match parts from. I kind of expected a lot more, but
yeah.
But most of these items, particularly for MMOs, will only really matter for the first few levels of the game. Unless they are like a cosmetic thing, like a uniform choice. Once you get past like the, you know, all the noob areas, you'll see less and less of that, except for like pets and stuff. And it really matters not too much.
Yeah, I would like to point out that I have a little shuttle pet, which I thought, I did not think that Star Trek Online would have pets, but I was so excited. It's just like a tiny little shuttle that zooms after your ship with a little red beam after it. I was very excited about it.
I guess the thing that was controversial about Star Trek was that, if you want to play as a Ferengi character or as a Klingon, on the Federation side, they charge you. How much do they charge you, Evan? It's like $2.
It's $1.50. I don't know if that's per or per race, but I mean, those are fundamental races. And I mean, especially if you're not getting those, even if you're buying the most deluxe digital version of the game or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just weird. It almost feels like they were like trying to see what they could get away with or trying to see what would work. And I mean, you don't do that with such a fundamental thing. Like I actually really wanted to make a Klingon Federation captain. And I didn't even know about this until, you know, days later that I would have to pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm not heartbroken about it because, I mean, especially, you know, being as nerdy as I am, I know that there have only been one of each of those historically in those universes. There was only one Klingon in Starfleet and only one Ferengi. So, you know, I'm not heartbroken about that personally. It's like, you know, why should there be a bajillion Ferengi running around? And, you know, there still can be if people care enough to insert coin. But, you know, they should really start doing that, you know, to play as Ferengi, insert coin now. But I mean, it's not really outrageous for me as a Star Trek fan, that they put up a little barrier to that. And, you know, again, in-game, microtransaction is something that we're going to see more and more of, which, to me, doesn't matter so much as long as the core game isn't broken without it. As long as it doesn't make it, they don't take out things that make the game fun and charge you for them. You know?
Yeah, it's officially a trend. I mean, at least since Dragon Age, it's become a fundamental, significant thing about, I mean, EA's philosophy itself. It's completely shifted to DLC is a fundamental, necessary part of our products.
Yeah.
It's going to be in every product. You're going to know about it before it even comes out. It's going to be hugely incentivized, within the game's fiction.
Well, I mean, that's something different from that EA is doing and different from the microtransactions, that you see, post-release and things like the Klingon and Ferengi. Because what EA is trying to do there is prevent you from reselling the game. So like, or like, if you do buy the game secondhand, you will still, if you want to get what you got when you bought it new, you will still have to go to them and pay them, because otherwise they're cut out of that transaction, which, you know, from a consumer perspective, it's like, why do I care where, you know, if EA gets any money from my secondhand copy of The Saboteur? But EA wants that money. So they're trying to grab it.
Yeah. It's a trend.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, they're just trying to squeeze out more money. That's what every good business does, is try and get more money. But, you know, it's not necessarily the most consumer friendly thing.
All right. Let's do one more quick kind of fun question. And then we'll go to playlists.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. This is Josh from Massachusetts. I've just got a quick preference question for you guys. So I find though, playing most competitive multiplayer games like TF2, COD 4, Company of Heroes, I love playing music in the background. And I've actually found that I'm one of very few people I know that does this. I find that it somewhat enhances the experience and just adds another level of fun to it. So I'm curious to see whether or not you guys listen to music while you game. And if so, what music you listen to. Alright, thanks. Keep up the great work. Bye.
I think all of us do it in different contexts. It's really interesting to hear to me that this guy, Josh, I think his name is, does it in a competitive context. I would think that music would distract you from, you know, vital in-game sound effects and things like that, but I definitely do it in a casual one. Like if I'm jumping into a Counter-Strike server with only bots, it's actually really handy through, the Steam in-game or in-interface browser. You can pull up Pandora.
Oh, I never thought about doing that.
Yeah, so you just shift tab, pull up Pandora, and you have a random playlist going through Steam. You don't have to alt tab. You don't have to go back and forth like that. So that's cool. I've been doing it in Star Trek Online a little bit too, because the music is a little over dramatic in some situations.
Yeah, sorry.
No, it's fine. Like this guy with this ridiculous vibrato voice while you're shooting a Klingon battle cruiser. It's like, no, let's just listen to whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the one time that I do it, that I play music in the background, is when I play MMOs. Because MMOs are, you know, so time consuming, and they can't possibly have enough music to make it interesting as you keep playing. And actually, like the first MMO I really got into and played a lot of was City of Heroes. I, you know, put a few hundred hours into that game, and I got tired of the music, so I started playing MP3s in the background. And now, but because of the playlist I had at that time, now whenever I hear Muse, I think of City of Heroes. It's like nice. I just remember jumping, you know, using my super jump and slashing up guys with my katana blades in that one. But yeah, I've actually like just gotten to the point in Star Trek Online where I'm like, okay, I need to make a playlist to play during this. And actually they have built-in controls for your music player. You can set which, in the options, you can set which music player you want to set up, and it will work with iTunes. I have iTunes running in the background, and it'll work with that, and you can control it from within the game. I'm not sure what I'm going to set up for that. I might go and get like some Star Trek soundtracks and just
nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe I'll play Star Wars music while I'm playing Star Trek. That would be blasphemy.
Yeah, I usually listen to, I'll listen to like punk if it's like a game I feel like I need to get pumped up on, you know? I'll toss in like Motion City Soundtrack, I'm a big fan of. And if it's a game that I'm not very good at, like, I'm not great at shooters, I'll admit that. I really enjoy them. I'm not great at them. I like to play a little reggae music because it relaxes me. So even though I'm getting sniped, I'm just like, okay, it's okay. I'm enjoying life. I'm having a good time.
Jama.
Yeah, Jaha. And then when I play WoW, I usually have Hulu in the background. I'm usually like rewatching Always Sunny in Philadelphia or something like that.
Mm. For me, I'm a podcast addict. So like when I'm mining in Mass Effect 2 or just running somewhere in WoW or cruising around in Star Trek. For me, it's mostly gaming podcasts, not so much music.
Yeah, I mean, it's a subtle thing, but I mean, I definitely put this under the column or the category of we're sort of reshaping the experience, right? I mean, we're making a game more casual or more personal to us, and that's something I'm really happy that we're able to do.
Well, but I mean, for the most part, though, I want to experience like the game with the music that they had intended, because that can be a big part of it. So unless the game's music really sucks, or unless it's a game that has, you know, I spend so many hours in that no matter how much music they have, it's going to get on my nerves. I tend to not replace it.
Repeat. gamer and don't be a gamer.
So what have we been playing this week? Let's start at the top of the list, Mr. Andy Bauman.
Oh, well, unfortunately, I'm straight off of the film festival, which is like a workload. It's like E3 for my job here. So I haven't been able to play much of anything. Just hearing a crap ton about Mass Effect 2 and just really, really wanting to play. I guess I have been playing Dragon Age. I'm trying to finish it. I'm at the end game.
Oh, nice.
As the cool kids say.
I have a question, Andy. Did we spoil anything for you with Mass Effect 2 with our discussion?
No, I don't think so. I think podcasts have spoiled it even further. So,
yeah. So, which race, class, and stuff did you choose for Dragon Age?
Dragon Age, I'm an elf mage.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, I hear a lot of girls choose that.
No. Hey, I'm a boy elf, though.
All right.
Dalish elf is Dalish, the one you're looking
that's
for.
Right.
There you
Cheap
go.
Shot.
All right, so Dan, what are you playing?
I've been playing a lot of Star Trek Online in my free time. And by free time, I mean like midnight to 2:30 a.m. I mean, it is not a perfect game by any stretch of the definition. I have numerous problems with it, but I find myself compelled to keep playing. They did catch me with the Star Trek nerdiness of it. I just leveled up to Lieutenant Commander, so I have, and I'm the first one in our group to do that, I believe. I got my first second tier ship, which is if anyone knows anything about Star Trek ships, it's similar to an Excelsior class, although I was very bummed they did not have, like actual Excelsior class parts to draw from. They had some that were like similar, but not quite. It's like, why would you not have one of the most used ships? And they have the Miranda class as one of the starting ones. Like the Excelsior is like, you know, the next step up in the Star Trek kind of hierarchy of ships. And they don't have it. What the hell? But yeah, it's similar, but not quite the same.
Coming to the microtransaction store soon.
Yeah. I really hope that's something they start beefing up immediately. The ship customization. And I really wish that like when I leveled up from lieutenant to lieutenant commander and I got to build a new ship, that they had let me keep all the ship parts from the first ship and let me integrate them into the more advanced looking parts. Because, you know, if I could just have like a Miranda class saucer section on my ship, I think it would look pretty cool. Or, you know, add like a roll bar like the Miranda class has. Or like the Centaur saucer section is basically the Excelsior saucer section. So I could put that on there and then I would have been happy. But no, but you know, I am still enjoying it.
All right. Eric, tell us what you've been playing and please use words that I understand.
Whatever you say, Captain Wow.
Actually, you probably shouldn't have said we'd stop talking about WoW. That's kind of been what I've been playing the most.
He wouldn't talk about WoW.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I've been trying to get my priest to level 80, working there very slowly. When I'm not playing, hopping into World of Warcraft, I have been joining Evan in some extremely unique ARMA matches.
Oh, yes.
I guess we'll talk about those when we get to you.
Sure. Yeah.
But that's about sums it up. I can't say how much I love Blizzard's Dungeon Finder tool. I mean, it's incredible. It's made leveling as a healer infinitely better.
Yes, I could not agree more. Evan, tell us about this ARMA 2-ness.
So,
is there Arma tuna we can get in a can?
Yeah, so, and hopefully this will be interesting to everybody, not just military enthusiasts that know how to break apart an M16. Actually, I've been talking to some of the guys at a game server hosting service called artofwarcentral.com. I had my personal Arma server with them in the past, and it worked out well, so we decided to move forward with a partnership with them. And they're going to be supplying us a bunch of really exciting game servers from now on that's going to include Counter-Strike Source. It's going to include Team Fortress 2, Killing Floor, Left 4 Dead 2. Pretty much you name it, we're going to have it. We're in the process right now of getting maps and mods and things on those servers. And we'll share more details in the IPs. And like we're going to have lots of forthcoming events, and that's super exciting. I can't wait to play in ridiculous kitchen Counter-Strike maps with you guys. But anyway, yeah, back to ARMA. So our new server, which has a 64-player capacity, which is amazing and really fancy, So there's a mission I stumbled into yesterday. Basically, Arma's take on cops and robbers. I mean, you've seen this in Grand Theft Auto and a bunch of other games, but it's really, really intricate and accessible and interesting, I think, and really kind of got me. I mean, it's one of the best mods I played all year, and it's not even a mod. It's just a map. But anyway, so there's three factions. There's the serial killer, played by one character. There's the two criminal associates, and there's up to 30 police officers. And, of course, the police officers are sort of roaming the area in their police cars, which are basically just little sedans, trying to find and apprehend these three individuals. And the three individuals include, well, first of all, I guess the serial killer's objective, and this is kind of ridiculous, but his objective is to kill 10 prostitutes spread throughout the town. And there's probably, I don't know, it's probably like a 10 by 10 square mile area, let's say. And there's different roads and there's different small towns and there's, but he can also commit other crimes as well as the associates. He can rob a bank. He can blow up a meth lab. There's arms dealers he can cooperate with. The police officers, don't like the arms dealers, of course, and they'll get in a fight with them. There's, what else? Oh, you can kill the police chief's wife. What else? You can, let's see, if it's just so intricate. I mean, it's an emergent sandbox with these kinds of rules. Like if a criminal commits a crime, the police will be notified of it in about 20 or 30 seconds later. And it's so detailed to the extent that, if you apprehend the serial killer, which is the objective for the police officers, there's a judicial system.
Oh God.
Okay. It's not as ridiculous and arcane as it sounds, but like basically if, we were playing this last night and Eric, you were the serial killer.
I was.
We didn't get a chance to see it in action because we let you out of jail after the serial killer dies. He automatically respawns in jail. And then basically what the way I understand it, like, depending on the amount of civilians you've killed, as police officer, that like sort of dilutes the facts, so to speak. So you can't prove as well that he did what he did. It's kind of complex.
Well, because you blew up the evidence.
Yeah, exactly. Cause
so Eric, you're not a method actor, are you? by the way, Evan, when you said this thing was called Crooks, I was hoping that it would be like staging a military raid on Wall Street. Just go in and shoot up Goldman Sachs.
That's coming. I think probably.
You could make that mod, yeah, very easily. Totally. But I mean, there's just very cool stuff. I mean, it's the police officers can basically decide, you know, do they want to set up checkpoints? There's an undercover police officer that can just sort of pose as a AI civilian, sort of hiding in the environment and report information. It's just really terrific, and I'm looking forward to making it sort of a staple of our server. And Eric, I think you eventually fell off a cliff, which is unfortunate, yeah. But yes,
I was on foot running away after I'm pretty sure a cop saw me in a town. And in Arma, you can free look, which means you don't have to look the way you're running. Sure enough, I was looking behind me, see if he was chasing after me. Boom, fell into a quarry.
I didn't know you were free looking behind you. That's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah.
So you kind of went out in not so much of a blaze of glory as a klutzy blaze.
Klutziness. But when I respawned in the jail and they opened the gate, apparently no one really had their weapons trained on me because I managed to run around the corner, find a ladder, and hide on a roof until something weird happened. I don't know, but I think we called it quits then.
Yeah, it's – and I just want to like reassure anybody that finds this stuff even mildly interesting. Like Arma is not a game where you necessarily need to know all these military facts or like be able to judge wind direction and nonsense like that. It's kind of – I mean, we appreciate those parts of it, but we play it to play Army in the backyard, basically. I mean, that's kind of what we were saying today, Eric, right? I mean, the other mod we were playing is hide and seek. One faction just kind of hides in the forest and the other has like these helicopters and searchlights and they have guns and all these resources. And we're playing hide and seek in this realistic emergent setting. And it's a blast. So if you have any mild interest, just ask questions in the podcast comments. I'm happy to help anybody out that's wants to get interested in the game, wants to hook up mods or anything. I'm happy to help them out.
All right. And me this week, I've been playing Star Trek Online. A little bit of WoW, of course. I apologize. I broke my promise to everyone. I know, I mentioned it. And I'm playing Global Agenda, which has been pretty fun.
Son of a lich.
So that about wraps it up for this week. If this podcast did not meet your highest levels of satisfaction, you only have yourself to blame. Make the next show better by sending us an MP3 question, comment, or praise. Criticisms will be quickly deleted at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com or call us toll-free at 877-404-1337, extension 724, and record your question there. If you like what you hear, you might just like what you see when you subscribe to the PC Gamer magazine and receive the world's best gaming PC gaming magazine in your mailbox each month. Just head on over to PCGamer.com, fill out the lovely subscription form, we'll send it to you. On behalf of everyone here at Camp PC Gamer, where the games are always fresh and the halls smell like lukewarm coffee and quesadillas, thank you all for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again next week.
Where's the quesadillas? Where's my quesadilla, damn it?
I actually have one slice of quesadilla left here. It's like 2 hours old, but it's yours if you want it.
No sale, Augustine.
Excellent. I'm still hungry.
It's selfish.
Hey, Josh, you're breathing into your mic.
Maybe I am.
What are you going to do about it?
What does a Smurfberry look like?
It's blue, obviously.
Are we recording, Andy?
Yeah, we're good to go.
Right.
Let's hear a little more enthusiasm, Andy.
Yeah, we're good to go.
There you go. Now we're done.
All right.
There we go. I know, Andy, this is my first hosting a podcast. You should be happy.
That's
for
right.
Me.
I did see that on the email. I was like, oh, shit.
And you won't have to answer any trivia on this podcast.
That's
hey,
true.
Got it right today.
Nice. All right, back to the word mines.
Yay.
Yes.
Thanks, Andy.
Yes, get that raw word idiom.
Grind.
Yeah. Right, Eric, later. I need you to put 23 and a half hours into mining me words.
I'm running low on vowels, you know.